Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And we are going to take you hyperlocal, provincial, federal, international, United Nations level on
Unspun.
Yeah, we will talk UN on Unspun. Oh, just
so we spin it right around,
Like a like a record baby, right?
Like
right,
a record right, baby, right around.
Let's start super hyper local, okay?
Yeah.
Unspun. We want to take the spin out of what we're seeing in the headlines, and there were lots of headlines locally over this past week. We always record on a Thursday, you and I. So I mean, the news cycle happens so fast these days. Remember when we thought, what do we do when there's a slow week?
When it was the Victoria and we were chopping, wood choppers were the issue.
Wood chippers. Yeah. That was a scandal. Anyway, let's start with a new party, yet another new party for the 2026 municipal elections in Vancouver, and a new voice running for mayor.
Yes, Rebecca Bly, which is running for mayor with the Vancouver vote. Something Vision Vancouver 2.0, I call it.
Oh, do
based
you?
Based on some of the people I saw in her video and some of the people behind the scenes, it looks like it's basically all the people behind Vision. So I had their deal, I think, in the video, who's a counselor with Vision. So it's basically Vision 2.0 for those who are interested in Vancouver.
Yeah. So what does that mean then? Like what Vision 2.0, like what is that? What is that without spin?
It's all spin with Vision Vancouver. They're trying to find, I mean, where does Ken Sim land on the political spectrum? Does anybody know? I think there's an assumption he's center right, further right than maybe we've had previously. And then, but you win, as we always talk about in Vancouver, with the mushy middle, the center. So we've got the BC Liberal, Vancouver Liberals. We got, this new party, Vancouver Votes. Vancouver Votes. And
I can double check.
Yeah. And then you've got the conservative, Vancouver Conservatives. So and who knows who their candidate will be. Probably John Cooper. Who knows? It'll be interesting if they run a candidate at all. I mean, I think that's what's going to be interesting over this next year. Literally, there are so many people. I mean, I get asked still if I'm running. I mean, literally, why would me and 5,000
people? I asked you
last
week. It's called Vote Vancouver, by the way. It's Vote Vancouver.
Vote Vancouver
is the name of the party. So Rebecca Bly, originally was really like closest to Ken Sim, wasn't she at one point?
She was NPA. She came in after I left when Ken Sim ran for mayor. He brought her in as a candidate along with some other people.
In NPA.
And then she won, he lost. Then she left the NPA along with a bunch of other people. Then he coalesced, grabbed them, and started his own party, which became ABC. And then added a few other people in there. And then, of course, they won a massive majority, all three levels of government in Vancouver, park board, school board, and council, which he's thrown away over the last couple of years. So now they had a super majority on council. They lost that when they kicked Rebecca Bly out of the ABC party. And she's been.
And for what reason? Why was she kicked out?
Nobody's quite sure. It was publicly. I think that, generally it's you're not doing what the caucus is telling you. You're not aligned with, you're not taking the marching orders.
You didn't fall in line like a good soldier would.
Exactly. And ABC's gotten in trouble through the ethics commissioner in Vancouver. Like, they've been holding caucus meetings, which, because they have a majority, like I was in council, there's only two of us. You hold a count, you have a caucus meeting, nobody cares. It's like, right. Nobody power.
I'm like,
when you have a majority, it's against the rules.
It's against the rules if you have a majority. I think that's what people don't really understand. Because it's like, of course they're talking to one another. Of course they're talking about how they vote. Of course they're going to. But then
if you have a majority of council, then you have to put it on the books. You have to announce
right,
it. You have to make it public.
To talk about it in a group setting where people
public
hear.
Setting.
Yeah. Public setting. Thank you. Not a group setting. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I needed that correction.
Yep.
Okay. So Rebecca Bly is started a party called, or is part of a party now called Vote Vancouver. Did I see anybody else that was
starting
joining the mayoral race?
Well, I mean, the jury's out still on Pete Fry. I would expect he would do quite well if he were to run for mayor. He might not
Right.
want to risk it because he's probably going to top the polls as a councillor. It's kind of the Adrian Carr
Right.
approach, just do the nice job. And but I think he would do quite well if he were to run for office. So we're all of them. We've got Colleen Hardwick, of course, still saying she's going to run for mayor. Which, where does that party land on the political spectrum? I don't know. They're anti-development, anti-money, anti-housing, but then pro-business, and it's very confusing, that party,
What
that
about
team.
Karim Alam?
So he's Vancouver Liberals, which
Right.
that's the liberal brand. It's probably helpful, but it's in Vancouver, because I would say a majority of Vancouverites are probably federal liberals. As far as you look at the, you're either NDP or you're a federal liberal, mostly in the city. So,
Right.
which shows you where we land on the spectrum. So if you go too far right, unless the left is all split into a bunch of political parties, then you can go further right. And I think everybody was expecting Ken Sim to be more fiscally prudent than he has. I mean, he is going to be bringing in a budget at zero for sure this year, like as I predicted he would four years ago, when
You
he brought
did.
in, 25% budget increase or tax increases over the last 3 years. The only way he might be able to curry some favor with the electorate is to give him a zero, which I'd put money on that he's going to have a 0% budget increase, which means
All right.
cuts, big cuts at the city. That it has
Would
to
have
has
to be.
it have to be.
Yeah, would have to be. Let's go provincial. Last week we were talking about the leadership review that was underway. With BC Conservative leader John Rustad and sort of the process of what you have to go from riding to riding 41 areas or voting and to talk about it's really a complex process. And we sort of were trying to look into the crystal ball last week. I don't think either of us had Eleanor Sturco packing up a box and leaving.
Two things. One was that very surprising. The 69%, I think he got, or 70% approval rating in that leadership thing, but only, I think, what I was told, 9% of the members showed up to vote. So,
Right.
and then they were locked in behind closed doors for quite a while. That around that same time, I'm not sure what was the outcome of that or what that was all about, but that sounds to me like a caucus revolt.
Right.
And then Eleanor Sturco, who was the first, I think, BC United person to jump and
She
join the
was.
Conservative, very, really, or started the first nail in the coffin of the BC United Party, when she decided to jump, because she was high profile and she ran in a different riding, that would have. Could have been NDP running, and she won it. So, a strong candidate, and now she's out. So much like Rebecca Bligh, maybe not a team player, not willing to align with the beliefs of the party or the caucus. And that's when you make tough decisions. I don't know Eleanor, and so who knows? But I do know what it's like when you have people who don't want to caucus properly, and it's really annoying.
Right.
So.
Quoting a headline here, John Rustad says he booted Eleanor Sturco from BC Conservatives to ensure party unity. So there's the line on that.
She
But
must
she's
have been
very vocal.
challenging. She's probably
Yeah.
challenging his leadership.
Yes. And she is quite vocal and very good at public speaking. I mean, she has been a forward-facing media member of law enforcement for many years prior to becoming a politician, and is very learned and well-spoken and passionate about what she believes. There are a lot of people who don't agree with Eleanor Sturco on a lot of things and agree with her on a lot of other things. She definitely didn't misrepresent herself when, in my opinion anyway, from just having, I don't know her well, but I've interviewed her. I've moderated debates that she is part of. She's very good at making her point again and again and again and again if she's looking to stick to it. And she did during the run-up to the election that won her a spot in the BC Conservatives current minority. What do we call it? Like, she did not ever mince words about who she is and how she lives and what her focus is.
She's a member of LGBT community, right?
She is.
So
She's married to a woman and very proudly so. And
which for the conservatives, good for the brand.
yeah, but then
Pro
what? Now
police
it's not.
and pro LGBTQ is something that,
Very strong opinions on safe supply, very strong opinions on, I see Eleanor Sturco doing you know, something else with someone
we'll see.
In
Who
some
knows?
Way. I don't know.
Who knows?
But it was quite a move. For her to be ousted leaves somebody who will speak very pointedly, I believe, in the weeks to come. And we're getting used to that in media, aren't we, really? Very pointed talk. We'll get to Jimmy Kimmel and Donald Trump and all that in a second. Mm-hmm. But first, we got to go to the BCGEU. I want to ask you about this. So the strike, the government employees union, this strike is ongoing, but we're seeing it escalate. And whenever strikes escalate, it starts to impact community more and more. And again, the restaurants are in the crosshairs here. This is so tough for the restaurant industry. Yeah. I feel for Ian Tostenson at the BC Restaurant and Food Services Association. Man, he is getting so much camera time again because the strike escalates because where do you block? Well, you block the liquor distribution branches. And there are a lot of people like, why? Why that?
Hit him where it hurts. You get as much as it may be bad PR, it's just raises the heat. And people just say, I need my bottle of Jack Daniels. No, you can't have it, can you?
Can't have that anymore.
Bottle of Burrow Owl. I probably didn't get that at liquor store either. It's too popular. Yeah, bottle of, give me something. It's a bottle of Mission Hill. There we go. I can't get it. I think even though it's a bad move from a PR, like, how dare you? It's the most high profile government ever, everybody wants a glass of wine or whatever and hit them where it hurts. And that raises the game. And it's kind of the last draw, really. The schools and all those other things, but generally you can get away with alcohol because it's not a, to some people it might be, emergency situation, essential service, but generally not considered an essential service. So it's kind of a really strong one to point out and to make people really mad at the government because people don't understand. They just go, the government employees, and then of course, because it's a cash cow, alcohol for the government, they don't want to lose that. And because the next step would be, well, let's just privatize so we don't have to worry about this anymore. Why is this a government organization? Privatize it. That would be, you don't want that when you've got, millions and billions of dollars coming in on revenue.
It's going to be something. It's going to be something. We'll see how this escalation goes. But again, I'm feeling for the restaurateurs out there.
There's no money for employees, though, for the government. They have no cash.
We'll talk about that with Canada Post. Yeah. Canada Post. When was the last time you mailed a letter?
Long years. Well, my office does. My accountant does.
I was just going to say.
I buy stamps. Yeah. I think I buy stamps.
And then you lose them. You buy stamps and then you lose them and then you forget.
We've got a little red mailbox in our desk. I think it's got stamps inside it. It's cute.
Amanda Bates. My gosh. I had to do taxes with my 17-year-old, right? Because he got the Simplify, right? He's got to do the thing. So I helped him, check all the boxes, and he had the envelope, the CRA envelope to return that. And I'm like, oh, it's a self-addressed stamped envelope, right? Because of course, a fixed postage here. I'm glad I looked.
Oh,
yeah. I would have just dropped that in the mailbox.
Government to government. They don't want to.
Anyways, but I had to explain to Brady how to write a return address on the corner of the envelope.
Right.
Like that's how he's just never. And he's like, I should probably put the postal code here. Yeah. That'd be good.
It's
maybe also the city.
Here's the value of Canada Post. And certainly if you live outside of Vancouver and you live in certainly remote parts of Canada, there's not only just the mail, which won't, Amazon's not going to deliver to wherever. I don't want to be mean about any town in Canada, but small towns.
Right.
In really northern remote areas. It's really tough.
Right.
That Amazon and FedEx, they usually Canada Post. And they, it's subsidized by the taxpayers of this country to get that stuff to those people. It's a way we keep our country together by having originally a rail line. And by the way, in a lot of these small communities, newspapers, some of the only way they actually hear about anything going on are distributed quite often by Canada Post. So it's a real problem for disseminating information to these small towns and getting stuff out there. It's much like when I worked at CBC, I always would argue, I worked for, when I first started there, for the morning shows outside of Vancouver. So I was based in Vancouver, but I worked in all these small remote radio stations that were CBC. And to me, that was the essence of what CBC was. That was the most important thing. It was radio, small towns where they had no other media outlet in a lot of these places.
Connect.
That was it. Yes. And that connected the community, reported on the government and that kind of stuff to keep their feet to the fire. That stuff's important. And in order to keep our country united, we need to make some commitment as taxpayers to certain things like a Canadian postal system, highways, trains, airports,
airports.
Sometimes subsidizing airlines in order for us to get around this country. Sometimes. It's a big country, a lot of people.
And making like digital connectivity, a right as opposed to like, as if the postal service is going to shrink because it's unsustainable the way it is right now. I mean, we're seeing that, it's steeped in loss. It's like absolutely so far in the red. What was it? Just to extend it from last Christmas to where we are now, going into some sort of arbitration here, like trying to figure it out. It just from last Christmas to where we are today was $1 billion just to extend to here. Like there's no like, well, let's just give everybody a raise. Like
And you said they're going to cut. What did you say at the beginning that they said
they're going to cut
rural routes,
close and end delivery to some rural post offices.
This is the wrong direction. To me, it's like, I don't need Canada Post to deliver my mail. I don't send it to some central box somewhere. I'll go pick it up. The 5 pieces of mail I get, like,
and the reason
every month, if that.
I'm with you. But the reason that they're closing or on a fast track to closing that is because of the backlash from people like you and I who live in city centers. You're like, I'm not going to a community mailbox. I want you to deliver it to my house. I would not care. If the 7 flyers, right?
Right.
Like, I don't care.
Gotta put that red
but I
dot
do
on
need
your
to
mailbox.
Know. Yeah, I did have the red dot in my mailbox. I should. It's faded and fallen off, I think.
Gotta put a new one on there.
Gotta put that back
send
on
a
there.
Signal.
You're right.
So signal. I think that's wrongheaded. I think that's wrongheaded in the government, and I think it defies and the intention of what the goal of a Canada Post or CBC or any national organization meant to keep our country united. United sounds political.
Okay.
I don't mean that, but
that's
I think it's just keeping us, you know, informed, all those things, whatever. I just think that I don't mind paying for that stuff. I don't mind if you want to live in somewhere really remote where we actually need you to live.
Trying really hard not to say tuk tuk yuk tuk because that's what everybody used to say.
I don't want to say that.
I know. I'm just saying that that's the unspot of wherever you might be. Yeah. Yes. I want to talk a little, we're going to talk a bunch of stuff in the short time we have left, but Mark Carney, our prime minister, very busy. Let's start with the UN.
Mm-hmm.
Let's tie in Trump here because how do you talk about anything? The United Nations General Assembly happened this week and the world arrives at the UN in New York. It's like the United States welcomes the world to talk about what we need to do in the year ahead to continue to have world order and look at what's working, look at what's not working and try and come together united. Of course, there was some, it felt like reality TV show drama when an escalator didn't work, it malfunctioned. There was all the, like Fox News went on for a day about the escalator malfunctioning. It turns out one of the president's videographers accidentally tripped the switch, the emergency switch that stops the escalator in the event somebody's caught in it, you know, but it was a big conspiracy that somebody at the UN did it. Teleprompter, which we have now confirmed, the teleprompter was run by somebody from the White House.
Yes.
So, I mean, this is ridiculous.
It's required. You have to have somebody who knows your notes. I think it's what's here's a analogy that I think of when I think about the United Nations, and this is where it seems to be right now. You've probably been a member or part of associations, and sometimes there's a couple of members that dominate because of maybe their ownership. If it's an industry association, you know, there's like this one company owns like 70% of the members of this association.
Yeah.
And almost invariably, unless they have the question comes up, why am I paying for this association? I don't need you. I represent 75%, you know, I can just do this on my own. And I can tell you for the ones I have worked with in that kind of situation, when you go into the government or you need to go ask for something, it's really hard to ask for it as a corporation. And if you come in there and you're asking as a nonprofit, and we represent 100% of the whatever industry it is, and you know, we're all in it together, blah, 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 it makes it much easier and less complicated for whatever it is you're asking for to get. The UN, basically, Donald Trump sees the, he's like that member of the association who's like, I own like 70% of you guys. And
that's right. I'm really good at this.
Apparently, yeah, exactly. Apparently, they haven't paid their dues. They're behind on their payments. So the UN's struggling financially because the Americans aren't paying. There was expectation that he would say, I'm not going to pay for it anymore. And I'm officially out kind of thing. But he didn't do that. But there was that, yeah. And so there was his speech, which was whatever, and then Trump, and then of course Carney came soon after, and it was, it was a definite difference of style, just put it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, how did you feel about the difference in style? I found it like a big drink of cold water, like just like, okay, there's some people there, and listening to the discussions of other leaders to try and dance around and pivot. And I mean, can you imagine? Mm. Having a translator earpiece and listening to the speech that the U.S. president did that was all over the place. Like it was, and so much bluster and bravado and insulting and racist. Like there was a lot going on there that was like, wow. And then you see diplomacy and you see somebody saying, okay, you know, I do appreciate that the prime minister didn't take any bait on that and went straight to what Canadians need, mm-hmm. want, believe, yeah. feel, should do. He's making deals. He's made a trade deal with Indonesia just today as we're recording on a Thursday. He's over in the UK trying to search for some new investment partners in that market. I mean, he's been back and forth. I'd like to see his air.
And he did that really. Q&A with I forget who at the United Nations, and they did it. And there was that woman thanking him, the journalist thanking him for the way he's governing, which was interesting. You know, but we're Canadian. You know, even that's just how we are.
It is,
and so, I like. I mean, he kind of said that he's, you know, we have a different style, and so I don't know. I mean, it's not, he's not embarrassing us. That's for sure. But I can see how there's a lot of conservatives in Canada who aren't happy at the speed at which things aren't changing. There's a lot, you know, Poilievre's thing is you keep talking, but where's the deals? Where's the pipelines? I mean, we got to see some progress soon. Otherwise, these stuff won't get built within, certainly in his term, won't even be started if he doesn't get going fast. So all the stuff that, you know, we got to see some big things that make big money for Canada, because that's what we need, cash.
Yeah, these things take time to build, though, don't they? Right?
Yeah, but just the investment.
You know, how many
the
months
investment
in?
Into them creates stimulus yeah. economy, though.
Let's
it
hope.
Creates Let's hope. Confidence in the economy.
Yeah, we do need a little dose of confidence, don't we?
Something the NDP could learn from. They haven't given us any boost of confidence in since 2017. So, hey, guys, give us a little boost here.
I'm actually more than a little bit worried with somebody who I love, is as most people know, my mom has Alzheimer's and is in a care home. And luckily we had enough money to afford to put mom in a place and space where she's safe. But the BC Care Providers Association put out a press release yesterday, very concerned about a pause. I won't get into all the details, but basically the supply and demand is way out of whack. Like when mom went into long-term care 2 years ago, we were able to secure her a spot fairly quickly. I mean, it cost a freaking fortune, George, and waiting for a subsidized bed. I mean, they could just take all of your money until you don't have any. But now you can't even get on a list.
Wow.
To maybe get in to pay for, like, it's because the boomers
are getting old.
And the demand is huge, and we do live in the Hawaii of Canada. So a lot of seniors from across the country find it more livable to be out here and then need more as we, you know.
So there's no local priorities? Like they don't say if you didn't live here before, anybody can get in these places from across Canada?
I'm not sure. I'm honestly not sure, but a lot of people, I mean, if I lived here and my mom lived in Toronto and then she had a fall and did a backslide and all of a sudden she had dementia, I would move her in with me. And then if she was here and moved in with me, I would find her a care home. And, you know, like, so I'm not sure. That's a good question. Yeah.
There's going to be nothing left for us.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Yeah, our kids will have to take care of us. Let's talk a little bit about the Jimmy Kimmel back. Last week, we were on as he was pulled. And interestingly enough, I did have a moment when watching his return when he mentioned George Carlin, because I do believe if we rewind to Unspun last week.
You did.
I did. So both of us were right, though. I mean, this isn't to me like, I was right and you were wrong, because both of us were right, because Sinclair and Nexstar said, we're not carrying them. So there are a bunch of, there's like millions of people in the U.S.
30 stations.
30 markets that that did not see Jimmy Kimmel because Nexstar and Sinclair Broadcast, who distributes Disney's product, Jimmy Kimmel. But did you see the YouTube numbers?
Yeah. They
pushed everybody.
One night. Yeah.
They pushed everybody to YouTube and everybody's like, why do I have cable? Probably not the best move.
Kids don't watch it. They don't watch any cable. They don't even know how the TV works, I don't think. It was interesting. And it just shows you for America's, you know, whatever their decision, you know, vote with your feet, vote with your wallet. You know, you put the pressure on $3 billion in lost revenue for the Disney Corporation in like 2 days. You know, this is how you make an impact. You can, and then vote in an election if they ever have a presidential election. Make sure you show up. That's the key here. Show up, tell them how you feel, and that's how democracy works.
And when you feel helpless, like you're just some random Canadian, right? People would be like, "You're not even American. Why do you even care?" Like, okay,
they're really close to us.
I do, and. I had legal alien status in the U.S. and lived in the United States. My parents lived in the United States for the better part of 35 years. Like, I have family in the U.S. Like,
who doesn't have
I care about freedom of speech, right? But here's the interesting part, George, because even being like just little old me over here, I landed in Newsweek this week.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because I went to cancel my subscription for Disney Plus because I didn't just say that I would. I was like, you know what, Disney? You don't get my $17 a month when I thought, wow, is it $17 a month? Right. As I was canceling it, but I couldn't cancel it. I got like the spinning and it was crashing because it was the very first day. I'm like, at the very least I can do is not give them, you know, a few hundred dollars a year. You know, I'm out. Mm-hmm. And then I took screen grabs of my inability to cancel. And I put a little collection on and I put them on Twitter. And I guess Newsweek saw it because it was one of the first to move and put it in one of their articles. And all these people started sending me Newsweek. Ah. It's like, oh, God. Okay.
Very cool. Very cool.
But it's like your voice matters. I didn't say everybody should cancel. I didn't say that. Mm-hmm. All I said was, I'm trying to cancel and they might be a bit busy.
Yeah.
Little did we know that a week later they'd be $4 billion busy.
Yeah.
People were canceling their $150,000 weddings at Disney parks. And if I were Disney right now, and I'm not, I would say, you know what, Sinclair and Nexstar, we're going to put Kimmel on our streaming platform and it's going to be free every week instead of the YouTube numbers getting it. Because once you get, you download the app and you get the thing and you turn on Disney Plus and there's Jimmy Kimmel, you don't even have to subscribe. You just go ahead and watch it. And then you're like, oh, they got Star Wars.
I don't understand. Like, we watch British TVs here and we don't have, you know, I don't know why are we even using TVs anymore? Why are there distributors? Why can't I just plug my computer into my TV and for all the channels? Why does it have to be so complicated? Like, my phone has the global app, but it doesn't do much.
Like, hey, you know what I have to say? The TELUS TV Plus app, when I'm away in Canada, I can't do it the United States because you're VPN, whatever. But if I'm, you know, up at a lake, I can log into my TELUS TV Plus, I think it's called, and watch all of my local. I get the guide, I get my PBR, everything. That's how I watch playoff hockey up there.
Maybe they don't do that in the States. I don't know.
Probably. But
anyways, I think that Disney, the damage is done. I'm not sure. I think that that brand is tarnished now. Not, you know, and it's
I
funny
agree
because
with
you
you.
think about what they did during Florida and the whole LGBTQ
Yeah.
thing, and they were like pushing back on Florida and the government, and now they're, thanks to this distribution company. I think that the whole model is crazy, that and it needs to be looked at. But of course, that's where this all began. That's what I said last week. This is an issue with the FCC, not about this distribution company. If they don't want to do, that's their
That's what you
prerogative. And
said.
if
I
Disney wants to
agree.
fire him, that's their prerogative. But this guy in charge of how licensing works is being totally biased publicly. That is wrong. That guy should get fired.
It's wild. I will say one more thing with a local twist. I love that Sarah McLachlan, our beautiful, wonderful, incredible songstress with a new album out, Better Broken is the single. She was supposed to be at her Disney Plus documentary, Building a Mystery, all about Lilith Fair, and unbelievable. She was supposed to attend the premiere of that. And she went, you know what? No. She said no. And I love that, Sarah McLachlan. I love it. And then I also love the fact that Jimmy Kimmel, when he was told he was going back on the air, went, Sarah, you're my
You're
musical
on.
guest.
Yeah, that's cool.
I loved
Smart.
it.
Smart.
Okay. That was, I literally made us go over by a minute just because I love Sarah McLachlan and Jimmy Kimmel like that. You can follow us on social media. Of course, you can. You can go to the X, it's called Twitter in my mind, and you can find George
We'll score.
underscore Affleck, George underscore Affleck. Great follow on the social medias. I'm Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, and unspunpodcast.com is where you can like and subscribe and be a part of the fun every week, George.
Bye.